Or the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee. First up, we're going to take up Senate File 1072. Senator Gimsey. Go ahead, Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate the opportunity to bring back to the committee what is now Senate File 1072. And first out of the gate, I would move the A9 amendment. It's a delete all amendment to Senate File 1072.
It should be in your packet, members. Senator Gimsey moves the A9 amendment to that point.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A9 amendment is, again, the omnibus policy bill from last session. What we did was attached it to 1072, and now we are moving 1072 forward as the vehicle bill for this omnibus bill. Many of the provisions in this bill we heard last year in committee and voted on them and laid them over for inclusion into this bill. So what I'll do is have Ms. Berzovsky highlight those provisions and also any changes. There were a few changes to the bill in this process, and we'll have her highlight those changes also.
All right. And members, if we could limit our, since we've already heard a lot of the bill and heard it last year, and it was our transportation omnibus bill last year, that we'd, for expedience purposes, just limit our testimony to the our comments to the new provisions that Ms. Berzovsky will be going over. So to that point, Ms. Berzovsky.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm working off the document that looks like this. It's in your packet, and it's a list of the bills that are included, the individual separate bills that are included in this A9 amendment. The first page, about two-thirds of the way down, this is a list of the bills that were in the Senate File 920 that was passed out of committee and had all the way to third reading last year. So I don't know if you want me to quickly highlight what's in that part.
Just briefly.
Sure. Thank you. And then after that, it's where it says included from House File 1068. Those are bills that were not in the Senate omnibus bill, but they were in the House omnibus bill. And those have all been heard now individually as separate bills by this committee. Okay, so I will briefly run through the first category of bills that were in the Senate File 920. The first is the forgiveness of Painesville debt to the State Airports Fund. And that in that bill, this involves a situation where the city of Painesville had received a grant of money from MnDOT to acquire land for the Painesville Airport. Then the money ended up not being used for airport purposes. This section would allow the city of Painesville to keep that money and use it for other airport purposes, but then to return it on June 30 of 2015 if they have not used it by then for airport purposes, and it would go back to the airport's fund. The next bill is a Liebenstein Highway Designation Bill, and that one designates part of I-35 as the Deputy John Liebenstein Memorial Highway, and the designating signs will be placed in rest areas along I-35. The next bill, Senate File 499, Online Driver Education, allows an applicant for an instruction permit to take the classroom phase online. And the the education program would have to be approved in advance by the commissioner, and it could not take up more than 3 hours per day of instruction online. The next one, 532, allows collect your emergency vehicles to use non-conforming colored lights in parades or other special events. Senate File 672, that would require DNR conservation officer unmarked vehicles to be registered and to display license plates. Section 785 is Senator DeCrieff's bill that would repeal the re-registration provisions for vehicles that are operating in excess of their gross weight. So instead of the current system where they would have to get their overweight permit at MnDOT and then go to DPS to re-register at the higher weight class and then possibly come in for a refund, this would all happen at MnDOT. MnDOT would collect the additional tax money. It would continue to go to the Highway User Fund, but it would be a one-stop operation. Senate File 920 is a MnDOT reporting bill, and this in part restates current reporting requirements, but it does consolidate two reports and call for information on some other areas: planning estimates, project costs, environmental compliance costs, construction management and pavement management, and bridge management. The next one is the underlying bill to this omnibus policy bill, Senate File 1072, and this exempts railroad operators from statutory traffic regulations and driver's license requirements while they're operating equipment on rails. Senate File 1077 is MnDOT housekeeping. It does a few things. It creates the Mississippi River Trail Bikeway. It corrects a route number for the Veterans Memorial Highway. It clarifies right-of-way for left turns and U-turns against a green signal or a flashing yellow signal or arrow. And it eliminates references to an obsolete federal rail program. Right. Senate File 1098 would expand the current law that allows MnDOT to authorize buses on certain highway shoulders. This would allow local road authorities across the state, and not only MnDOT, to allow buses to operate on their highway shoulders. Senate File 1121, this allows a motor carrier to carry an over-dimension permit electronically, and it creates a new permit for vehicles in the 145,000 to 155,000 pound weight class, so that now that I believe they have to get a single trip permit now. And it also changes somewhat the ability of intrastate commercial drivers to obtain waivers on certain medical requirements, and this has to do with driving on a suspended, canceled, or revoked license. Senate File 1124, child passenger restraint violations. This would subject Type 3 vehicles and school buses that are 10,000 pounds and under to the child passenger restraint law. And it also allows school districts and child care providers to receive a portion of fine revenues from violations of the law to help them pay for the seats and restraints. Senate File 1136, electric assisted bicycles. And this allows these vehicles on various types of trails and bikeways unless the trail authority finds that their use is unsafe. The next provision is language that was given to us by the Department of Public Safety to correct a cross-reference in language that was enacted last year on the $2 contributions to the anatomical gift account. Then the next category is bills that are included from the House and that were heard separately in this committee. The first is Senate File 188, and this designates a pedestrian bridge in Rochester for a young woman who was killed near that bridge, and requires MnDOT to place signs close to the bridge that are paid for by non-state sources. Senate File 266 exempts vehicles that are operated for road authorities from weight limits when they are getting ready for winter storms. Senate File 689, that changes the town road distribution formula. This is a formula that is adopted by each county board. And this section would provides that the formula does not have to include a minimum levy in the previous year for transportation property tax. Senate File 1078 authorizes MnDOT to run a pilot project to use alternative financing, which is basically partnership with private entities or nonprofits. And this would have to be reported to the legislature if they take advantage of that authority. Senate File 1082 deals with DWI driver's license revocation, so the civil penalty side of DWI. And it's mainly recodifying and correcting certain language in order to conform with the changes that were made, I believe, in 2010, the major DWI bill that was passed then. Senate File 1083 changes the definition of a public impound lot. It narrows it down a little bit. It excludes lots that are privately owned, and they may contract with a local government unit, but they aren't operated solely for public use. Senate File 1148 has to do with rail bank use. It changes from a petty misdemeanor to misdemeanor for a list of activities that are not allowed to be done on rail bank property, and it allows for placement of fences and signs as long as they're okayed by MnDOT. Senate File 1215 allows the driver's license agents, and we've already done this for the deputy registrars, so this would be the driver's license agents, to collect convenience fees when they're processing transactions with credit and debit cards, and it authorizes rulemaking. Senate File 1297 has to do with MnPass authority. It allows MnDOT to open up a MnPass line on I-35E between I-94 and I-694. And it also changes the handling of toll revenues. It provides that they can be used to maintain or improve any part of the MnPass system. They don't have to, their use is not restricted to the corridor in which they were collected. And it also takes out the provision that 50% of the excess revenues can go to bus transit, can go to the Met Council for bus transit in the MnPass corridors. That provision is removed. Senate File 1347 was heard by this committee a couple days ago, and that's the one that exempts vehicles in roundabouts from the requirement of displaying a turn signal 100 feet before the turn. And this, in the final one, Senate File 1356, was also heard the other day, and that is the variance for the seaplane base. That concludes bills that are a part of the A9.
Thank you, Ms. Borowski. Welcome. Senator Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, Ms. Berzovsky hit the highlights very well, and I guess I would stand for questions.
Questions? Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Gimsey. I think most of these provisions are pretty good. I don't see a lot of concern with most of them. I do have a question, though, about on the REST MnPass provision, the change that was made to it. This is on page 4, lines 16 through 18, simply eliminating any of the revenue collected that might be left over, and it was going to be divvied up, for improvements to the corridor, as well as the improvements to the corridor that were available through use of transit in that corridor. So none of it is available then. Transit, wondering why we've made that change.
Mr. Gimsey, Senator Gimsey.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, the money that is generated through the MnPass lanes it was the desired effect that money goes back to those MnPass corridors for the maintenance. For the first time in all of the years, and I don't know how long we've had MnPass lanes, There has not been any money left over. Last year, I believe, was the first year that there was some excess dollars, and it amounted to about $200,000 that the Met Council and MnDOT received. The thinking is that those dollars should go back to those corridors, and as we continue to look to add corridors, the cost of maintaining and operating them is only going to increase. So we just felt it was better that those dollars are put, number one, in one pool so that they can be used across the entire system, but then secondly, that those dollars be used for those MnPass lanes.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that rationale. I'll just respectfully disagree. I'm not ready to make a motion now to change the language back to what Senator Rest had proposed, but part of the idea when we first developed the MnPass corridors was to make the best use of that additional roadway capacity to benefit both the general purpose lane users as well as the toll facility users in as free-flowing condition as possible and make sure it's a really robust transportation corridor. And part of that benefit, a great deal of that benefit, is actually available through good transit service, which, of course, has been possible without a lot of extra dollars laying around because of the capital costs and the operating and maintenance, including all the public safety costs that the state troopers get for the enforcement piece, has absorbed most of the available dollars. But as we go forward, it's hoped that there will be a few extra dollars laying around to put into the transit service in those corridors that benefits everyone, not just the transit users, but folks in their cars who are using the general purpose lanes and folks in their cars who are taking advantage of the hot lanes.
Senator Dempsey.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, this was an agreement that was worked out between MnDOT and the Met Council. The Met Council agreed to it, so I think all of the partners that were involved in the discussion are satisfied that we need to continue to maintain those MnPass lanes, all of the equipment, and the growing amount of equipment that we'll be seeing as the MnPass and the bus rapid transit and other forms and certainly these MnPass lanes are going to make a lot of those corridors a lot more accessible and practical. And so we're just looking to keep those dollars in those corridors and be able to move transit in a positive direction as those corridors become available. So
I'll defer to Senator Ress.
Well, I've got Senator Reinhart first. To this point? Okay. Senator Ress, to that point.
Chairman and Senator Gimsey, I spoke with a representative from Met Council just yesterday afternoon, and that was not his understanding that there had been any kind of handshake on changing that language. I'm going to defer here to Senator Dibble and agree with him not to make any changes to what you have here. But I do hope that we can have an ongoing discussion about what the proper division of those funds are. But I'm not aware, at least from Met Council, from the representative from Met Council, who's not here today, that he was not aware of that change in the language to the extent that it was here. So just. But I hope you're open to, further discussion of it to see whether that indeed is the proper way to go to keep it the system as healthy as possible.
Senator Gimsey.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, we want to keep the system as healthy as possible, and the focus of this bill and our effort and to keep that money in those systems, I think, is an appropriate approach at this point in time. It troubles me deeply that you have different information than I do, and I would like to get to the bottom of that, and I'll continue
Chairman,
to have
Senator
that
Senator Gimsey,
dialogue.
That's why I brought it up, because I thought
we'll find out.
You said that. I thought, really? Okay.
Senator Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple questions, if you'll indulge me. The first is I'd like to just get a brief review on the fiscal note, especially the cost and the out years.
Mr. Chair, excuse me, Senator Reinert. Yeah, I regret that we didn't have time to get a full fiscal note done from MMB, from all the agencies. I did try to put together an estimate just to give you a sense of scope based on last year's bill. And we can go over the individual provisions if you'd like, or if you had a specific question on a provision.
Senator Reinhart.
Mr. Chair, I mean, I just think we should spend a couple minutes as a committee talking about the fact that we've got $300-400 million per year in the out years. That's in and of itself not a bad thing, but, you know, we're all very fiscally minded, and I think if you want to just hit, I mean, I can look at this and see where the couple big expenses are, but those folks listening at home or watching at home don't have the fiscal note that we have, so I think having a couple minutes of verbiage around it would be helpful.
Senator Gimsey, would that be acceptable?
It would be acceptable, Mr. Chair and Senator Reinert, but what we're talking about here is thousands of dollars, not millions.
Stand corrected.
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands.
Yes, and I think we should have that discussion, and you know,
okay.
Certainly want to answer any questions that you have. This bill will also be going, will be moving from here to finance.
So
Ms. Boyd, do you want to cover that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you look at the grid, I actually did notice one thing that should be changed as we sat down. If you look on the revenues for Senate File 785, there are three lines there for the overweight motor vehicle registration surcharge. This was based on old language where the fee revenue that replaces the registration tax revenue would be deposited directly in Trunk Highway instead of the Highway User Tax Fund. So there was a small change to what would be received from Trunk Highway as opposed to the state aid funds. That language has been updated, and it now goes directly to Highway User Tax, just as the registration fee did. So those three lines should, they cancel each other out, so it doesn't affect the bottom line, but
okay.
They should be canceled out there.
Okay.
It does affect us. It makes the cost of the Trunk Highway Fund look a little bit greater by that $49,000 a year of the bill. So if we start at the top, Senate File 499 in the bill on online driver education, allowing for that. There's a small cost there to the special revenue fund, and that is for rulemaking, basically, to account for that change. And there's a very small cost, I think about $2,000 included in that $32,000, having to do with the cost of the certificates that are provided by the department. But those, if you look on the bottom under revenues, that is canceled out by the revenues that are obtained from the providers of the mm-hmm. online driver education. Again, in expenditures, we have $30,000 for the overweight motor vehicle registration surcharge. That is changes to the permit system, and that'll come out of the Trunk Highway Fund to account for that change. Senate File 920 was having to do with the major highway projects and expenditures report. This is mainly to do with staff time to do a lot of the reporting requirements, and some of the cost is for independent evaluations that have to be done for the department. The child passenger restraint modifications from Senate File 1124, the language in the bill will put the department back in compliance with federal law, so this is a pickup of about $378,000 estimated in federal funds per year. And you'll see that line is also down on the bottom in revenues because those are pass-through funds. So they come into the federal fund but then go out to local governments for those programs. And then Senate File 1297 has to do with the high occupancy toll lanes that we're talking about here. And this is just a change in revenue from the Met Council back to the Trunk Highway Fund because of the changes in how those revenues are allocated. In the revenue section, I think the only thing we haven't touched on then is Senate File 132, the Painesville Airport. This is a small amount picked up as a loss of interest income from the loan to Painesville Airport that would be forgiven until 2015. And Senate File 1121 is the overweight vehicle permit weight class addition, about $5,000 a year, and that would strictly be revenue from the new permits.
Right.
Thank you, Ms. Boyd. Senator Reinhart.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And Ms. Boyd, thank you. And again, I just want to be clear to the chair in your bill. It's not any concern. I just think when we have those, especially for folks at home that don't have the information we ought to just put some verbiage to it. Mr. Chair, I do want to thank Ms. Berlowski and staff. We thank staff, but I don't think we do it often enough. I'm always impressed that, you know, we made a change on the fly with Senator Ingebretson's bill, and boom, there it is. It's already in the A9 amendment, so that's a kudos to our staff. And, Mr. Chair, I don't know if you want to take it or Chair Gimsey now, but I do have some questions revolving around the Painesville Airport Fund issue, so I'd like to have MnDOT come up at some point, but I can ask for that later if that's more appropriate.
I think we'll wait on it for right now.
Thank you.
Senator DeCry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question on part of one of my bills, Senate File 785. And the part I am questioning, and on each of the section numbers, there's a date on there of January 1st. The page numbers to look at are pages 10, 13, 22, 23, and 27. But each of the section numbers that are related there come with a date of January 1st, 2013. And it seems that this isn't a real complicated thing. I don't know why we have to push that out an entire year. To me, a more reasonable request would be July 1st to help the trucking industry and move this up.
Senator Gimsey.
Mr. Chair and Senator DeCry, I think we've had this discussion, and I think the concern on the part of the agency was that if this doesn't pass until May, it would be very difficult for them to put this into place before, say, a July 1st of this year deadline, and that's why we moved that forward to January 1st.
Senator DeCry.
I don't know. Can we hear from MnDOT maybe a little bit later on that issue, too? It doesn't seem like there's very much that they have to do to make this change. I think it's a pretty simple fix as I understood it. So, I mean, and we can maybe address that a little bit later too, possibly. But I hate to lose an entire year.
I think this is one we can address right now. If we have somebody here from MnDOT that would like to speak to that. Rudine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eric Rudine with MnDOT Government Affairs. And I think, as Senator Gimsey indicated, if this bill were to be signed into law within the next couple of weeks, I don't think a July 1st date would be a problem. The issue would be if this went into May, then we would only have about a month and a half to implement this new system, which could be problematic. So, I guess for the time being, if the committee is more comfortable with July 1st, anticipating that this bill will proceed quickly, I think that would be okay with the department. And then if it's not enacted in a speedy manner, we could look at changing the date back to January 1st.
Senator DeCry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would appreciate moving it forward to July 1st, and if we have to look at it again, if we have to bump it back a month or something, but I would hate to lose an entire season for a clerical computation, basically. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, should I point out the places that I'm talking about? It's each of the section numbers that are listed here have a date on them. So if each one of those could be changed to July 1st, 2012.
Senator DeCry, Ms. Borowski, could you state that, restate his motion for that?
Mr. Chair, I don't have all the pages and lines. I can just work those out afterwards if that's all right. But with respect to sections 14, 15, 16, 29, 30, and 33, January 1, 2013 will be deleted from the effective date and substituted July 1, 2012.
All right. Senator DeCry moves to amend the A9. All those in favor, or any discussion first? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion carries. Senator Gimsey.
Any other questions? Senator DeCryf has something.
Senator Gazelle, okay.
Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment whenever that's appropriate.
Okay. Other questions to the discussion here? Senator Reinhart? Oh, you wanted to talk? Okay. Let's take up Senator Reinhart's concern. Would someone from MnDOT want to address that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Roy, who works at the Airports Fund, would probably be the best person.
Mr. Roy.
Yes. My name is Chris Roy. I work with the Minnesota Department of Transportation Office of Aeronautics.
All right. Senator Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Roy, I guess my question is twofold. One, you know, I have global concerns about the airport fund. We haven't been able to discipline ourselves well enough to keep our hands out of it a couple times now. And, you know, it serves a very specific purpose in keeping especially our general aviation airports around the state healthy and in good operation. But in this case, I'm also concerned that we're forgiving a debt for which, you know, I'm a fan of small airports, but we're forgiving a debt, as I understand it, for which the Painesville folks got money from the state. So to get money from the state but not give the money back to the state really is a net plus to the airport of taxpayer dollars. And I just want to make sure, A, that I understand that correctly, and then, B, what is the fiscal health of the overall airport fund?
Okay. Before you answer that question, we had a lengthy discussion or debate on this when the first time it came in front of our committee. So, Mr. Roy, to that point.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I don't recall that at all, and I'm pretty tuned into aviation issues. Right. So.
Mr. Roy.
Very briefly, giving a little history as to how we got to this point. In 2002, the city acquired a grant for the airport for acquiring property, and that was from the State Airports Fund. In 2009, MnDOT Trunk Highway comes along and buys a portion of the property from the airport and pays for the property, including damages back to the airport, at which time that property is no longer being used for aeronautical purposes. As a part of the original grant in 2002, one of the conditions was as soon as that land is no longer used for aeronautical purposes, it is due back the fair market value back into the state airport fund. The city was paid by MnDOT for the property, was paid by Trunk Highway MnDOT, paid for the property that was airport property. They included the damages, and to date we have not received the repayment to the state airport fund. The bill in front of you would actually forgive that repayment until, I believe, it's 2015.
Okay. And
Senator Reinhart.
Mr. Chair, just executive summary on overall health of the airport fund.
Mr. Roy. Mr. Roy.
Chair and Senator, the airport fund right now, last fiscal year, carried about just under a $3 million balance. We receive our funds right now at roughly the same amount that's appropriated. Appropriated amount for this fiscal year is about $19.6 million. The health of the fund is one that we're spending a little bit more each year than what our revenues are. So our balance is diminishing is what's occurring. Next year, we do receive back taxes in the form of flight line property tax from the bankruptcy of Northwest Airlines, at which point that would replenish our balance, and we over the course of the forecasted years out to 2015, we do have come very close to a zero balance in the last year of the forecast.
And Mr. Reinhart, or Senator Reinhart.
One small. So is it accurate to say forgiveness, or is it more accurate to say delayed repayment when we talk about the 2015?
Mr. Roy.
Chair and Senator, it is considered to be more forgiveness, but it's done in a unique way. Airport projects are usually prioritized, and then we would give grants to those projects in order of priority. What Painesville is asking for is not to be prioritized with the rest of the projects. As soon as they have a state airport fund eligible project, they would use city or local funds to pay for the state airport eligible portion. So their project would not be prioritized with the rest of the projects. So when you look at the entire system, the project they select may not be the highest priority project in the state or one that would even receive funding from the state. It might be considered such a low priority, but it would be an eligible expense for the fund. The other thing that happens is because of the forgiveness for a period of time, that's a lost opportunity. Those dollars are not being able to be used at other airports across the entire system.
Thank you. Senator Gimsey.
Mr. Chair and Senator Reinert, I think you need to take a look at the whole picture of this, and I, again, don't want to get into a long discussion on this because we did cover it last year, but I think you need to take a look at the map or possibly some information on just what happened when they are improving Highway 23 to a four-lane. They clipped a portion of that property. And there were some discussions about using that money with some on and off ramps that are going on there. The city is going to have to buy additional property for airport hangars in order to accommodate that lost property. So there's more to this than just the forgiveness of $52,000 and what happened there. And that was all in the testimony last year, but. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like MnDOT doesn't know what aeronautics is doing, and it has gotten to be a tug of war between the two. And the city has specific airport purposes in mind for those dollars. And so we just want to I don't like the word forgiveness either, because if they don't use them by 2015, that money will go back to the airport fund.
Okay. So. Thank you, Senator Gimsey. Senator Gazelka.
I'd like to offer the A11 amendment. I'm not sure if it's in the packets or not, Mr. Chair.
All right, let's wait until it gets handed out.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Senator Gimsey. Mr. Chair and Senator Reinert, if you want to just pass that around to other committees, that would be great. Thank you.
Senator Gazelka offers the A11 amendment to the A9. Can you speak to that?
Mr. Chair, and this is not quite housekeeping, but certainly the DOT is aware of this. But on page 41, line 32, we would insert the word knowingly in front of perform. I'll read that out. Unlawful to knowingly perform any of the following activities on rail property. I believe that is some comfort language for the agriculture community. And then page 42, line 18, is something I was working on last session. And we would delete building or and insert permanent on line 42. Page 42, line 18. You know, basically we're talking about permanent building structures, and in fact it really related to a potential deer stands that are already out there that would not fall into the permanent category. But I believe DOT may want to comment on it, but I believe they're good with it. So.
Senator Gazelka has moved the A11 amendment to the A9. Is there any further discussion? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did I hear that MnDOT was going to comment? I'm curious what the knowingly standard is, and what permanent structures versus non-permanent structures.
Mr. Rudin, to that point.
Implication.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The intention for adding the word knowingly is because the department was really concerned about. People who continue to violate the law after they've been informed that they're misusing state rail bank property. There may be cases, for example, where a farmer has planted a crop and maybe just doesn't know where the property line is, and it was never our intent to go after that type of a situation. And so if they're unfamiliar with where the boundary of the rail bank property is and we tell them, and then they, you know, the next season they comply. That's really what we're after there. And then the permanent structures, again, that I think was our original intent. We do have people that might erect a storage shed, for example, in state rail bank property right of way, and we don't feel that's appropriate. And so a permanent structure like somebody's garage or a storage shed, you know, obviously shouldn't be located on the rail bank right of way. But if there's a temporary deer stand, then that's not where our concern was. Great.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Mr. Radin? Thank you. Any other discussion? Senator Gudelka renews his motion to move the A11 amendment to the A9. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Amendment is adopted. Senator Gimsey. Any further discussion on the A9 amendment?
Mr. Chair and members, then I would...
Mr. Chair, could I speak prior to your...
Sure. Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair, I still have challenges with the 1299, Senate File 1299 being in the bill. This is an expansion of tollways in the metro system. We've heard some questions about the understanding between the Met Council and MnDOT, and there seem to be some clarifications that would still need to be made. My concerns might be a little different than the other concerns that have been voiced so far. I am very concerned about expanding fees and expanding tollways in the metro highway freeway system. I'm also concerned that the funds in this program are going to be co-joined with other transit or other tollways. It seems to me that if we're raising money in a local area, that those monies should be spent in the area that they are raised from versus spent in the whole metro area or in other areas. So I would like to ask if there's a way to table that particular bill to allow us more conversation while still moving forward with the rest of the bill. And I would be willing to make a motion to that effect, but I would like the opportunity to have some discussion prior to making that motion.
All right. Thank you. Senator Gimsey.
Mr. Chair and Senator Lilly, we've had this discussion. We had it at the end of last session, you know, and I understand your concerns and appreciate them, but when you're taking a look at a transportation system as a whole, to not allow the flexibility to be able to maintain and operate all of these busways, these rough bus rapid transit ways, the MinPass lanes, and all of the equipment and the associated costs as a whole, I guess to that point, I think that we can better manage. If we were to eliminate the three separate accounts that are currently in there, that are currently available, and probably create a fourth account in the event of the I-36 portion going through here. But, you know, I guess as a planner and looking at the system as a whole, I guess I would make the argument that this is probably a good way to manage it. You know, I heard the concerns last session about money leaving this particular account for these purposes and being given to other bus transit areas, and we were able to work through that, and I thought, for the most part, had resolved most of the issues with that money not staying with the MinPass and the operation and maintenance of those systems. By no longer splitting the remaining or excess amounts in the fund between the Met Council and MnDOT, and just allowing them to operate this. Thirdly, on the expansion, if you will, of this I-36 corridor. MnDOT originally came to us with it, and as early as this year even, the language read that they would have over a system authority to implement these lanes and these systems without oversight from the legislature. One of the concerns that was made last session that we addressed was that we would look at them specifically. And that's why you see in the language we're talking about a short section of I-35E that runs from 94 up to 694. And, you know, we tried in our efforts to make to accommodate as many of those concerns as we could, but MnDOT needs this authority to move forward with an improvement to I-35E and plan for the future in where we use MnPass lanes for transit purposes also. And, you know, we have had the discussions about whether they're effective or not, and they are proving to be very effective in moving people very quickly, and especially when we get down the road to where we're using bus rapid transit as a more throughout our system and, you know, in the vision for transit in the state of Minnesota, that is a major part. And we want to have those easily accessible corridors where we can move people as quickly as we can. And a part of that is creating and preparing for the future. So I guess I would be resistant to moving this particular part of the bill. I think it's important. I think MnDOT needs it to move forward with the planning and for the future of transit, you know, and transportation in Minnesota. And it's an overall bit global, broader thought process that's going into this.
Thank you, Senator Gimsey. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Gimsey, maybe you can give me some clarification. But as I look at this section on page 3, it's my understanding that we are increasing lanes, but there really is no more, I don't know what the right term is, surface area that we're broadening. And so if that's true, that we're increasing lanes by simply changing the striping on the road, and now we're going to add a toll lane, that is my concern as well. Can I get clarification from you on that?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Gimsey.
There will be no additional right-of-way purchased for this. There is adequate right-of-way in that corridor to establish these lanes. But we could have MnDOT come up and talk about, you know, the exact planning and how they're going to create the lanes. But my understanding is there is no additional cost to doing this as far as from the perspective of right-of-way.
Nickelham. Mr. Chair, Nick Thompson will explain. The point I was going to make much better than I'll be able to. So.
Chair, members of the committee, we are doing a major reconstruction of a bridge project within the I-35E corridor, which will add the capacity, and with that, adding the MnPass lane to the north, with, as the senator said, within the existing right-of-way that exists on 35E, we will be at...
Mr. Thompson, could you just identify yourself for the record, too?
Nick Thompson from MnDOT.
Thank you.
We will be adding, right now there's three lanes in each direction, and the MnPass lane would be a fourth lane in each direction, and we can fit that within the space that we have, but we will widen it out in portions to add that fourth lane.
Well, one follow-up, Mr. Chair, if I may. So Senator generally Gisella. Speaking, the area of pavement isn't changing much.
In certain sections we will add widen the area of pavement, especially where the new bridge construction is. That'll be wider than it is today. And in some places, we'll take away the left shoulder to add the lane, and other places we'll be able to also have a shoulder. So it's a combination of that, but the total pavement area will be larger than it is today. But we won't widen the right-of-way into the neighborhoods at all.
Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, could you comment on lane width as it currently stands and lane width under the proposed change?
Mr. Thompson.
Correct. The lanes on 35E, currently each lane is 12 foot wide, which is the standard. We expect that the new lanes will, for the most part, be 12 foot wide. In some sections, like we've done on 35W, we can go down to 11 foot lanes safely. What does change is the width of the shoulders, and sometimes we'll have a narrower left shoulder than is out there today, but it'll be designed and very safe and proven to be a safe lane width operation.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Thompson while he's there? Thank you, Mr. Thank you. Senator Dempsey.
Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to offer the A-12 amendment. This is a technical change, and I'll have Ms. Berzovsky, since it's dealing with sections and subdivisions, I'll have her explain.
Let's wait just a minute until it gets handed out here. Ms. Berzovsky to the A-12 amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, what this amendment accomplishes is to remove an inconsistency in the bill because, as the department pointed out, there's a mistake that I made to include this repealer when we're actually keeping that section and amending it. And this has to do with Senator DeKreif's Senate File 785. And I'm just looking for the page where you want to see how. Okay, it begins. It's a long section of law, and it begins on page 8, line 20. No, excuse me, it does not. Subdivision 12. Sorry about that. It's on page 13, it's section 16. And what we've done here, instead of repealing this section, and I think the departments agree with this. I spoke to them both this morning. We just say at the bottom on 13.28 that this subdivision does not apply to those vehicle owners who go through the new system where they're paying that additional charge to MnDOT. But then by leaving that language there, it would pick up those who don't go through MnDOT to get get an overweight permit.
Would members like to hear from MnDOT on this? Or oh, all right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Senator DeKreif?
I have a question on that. I think what part of the intent was here, and I just want a clarification. Maybe you can, and maybe MnDOT would need to clarify this. But I think part of the intent was to make sure that in lieu of asking people to make that extra step and pay that extra fee, we're still asking them to pay the extra fee but pay it up front so that actually we would capture everyone and no one would have the option of saying that they're going to go do the extra step and then not. So does this open up that option that somebody could still get an overweight permit and say that they're going to go do the other step of raising the weight and then they wouldn't?
Ms. Berzovsky.
Mr. Chair and Senator DeKreif, as I read this section, if an owner has to go to MnDOT for the overweight permit, they would be required at MnDOT then to pay that extra amount, and MnDOT can correct me if I'm wrong on that.
So,
Senator
Chair, if I could have just a little bit of extra clarification. So there are some people that have a registered weight if they're going, for instance, if they're going to haul the same cat around, a big cat, caterpillar, they might register the weight of their tractor at 150,000 pounds or 100,000 pounds for the whole year. So those people then would not be required to pay this extra fee. Is that the way I'm?
Ms. Berzovsky?
Okay. Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Rudin is looking for some clarification.
Yeah.
apologize, Mr. Chair, for the delay. We were having a conversation with Driver and Vehicle Services because they're the ones today who issue the refund. But I think our understanding is that if this language remains in current law, that Driver and Vehicle Services will be allowed to continue operating as they do today, where if a person re-registers a truck at a higher weight and the person wishes to get a refund and go back to the lower registration, they would be allowed to do so as they are today.
Senator DeCryf.
So essentially, the permit office wouldn't be collecting this fee.
Mr. Chair, the permit office at MnDOT would collect the new surcharge and the fee, but the office at Driver and Vehicle Services, if a person chose to re-register at the higher weight, could still give the refund to a person who wished to re-register back at their original lower weight.
Does that answer your question, Senator DeCryf? It's a good question.
I think so, but if I could, let me just clarify a little bit more. So typically, if a person gets a single trip permit for an overweight load, and they're not going to be doing this every day all summer, they will go in and get a permit. And at that time, if it's a 7-day permit, their registered weight on the tractor will not be increased, but they will pay the fee to increase it at that time when they get the permit. And then they won't have to go back and do a step of lowering it because the fee will be paid, but the registered weight won't actually be increased.
Mr. Chair, I believe that is correct. D. We'll continue to work with Driver and Vehicle Services to try to clarify this, and we'll get back with you, Senator DeCryf, in case we've said here is not correct.
Thank you. Senator Gimsey.
Mr. Chair and members, if there are no additional questions, I would like to move that Senate file.
Senator Gimsey renews his motion to adopt the A-12 to the A-9. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is adopted. Senator Gimsey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would move that Senate file 1072, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Finance.
Senator Gimsey has moved the A-9 amendment to the Senate file 1072 be adopted. Is there any discussion? Senator Reinhart.
Procedurally, I think we adopted the A-12 to the A-9, but we didn't adopt the A-9 to...
Yeah, you're correct, Senator Reinhart. So we need to adopt the A-9 to the Senate file 1072. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? A-9 is adopted. Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Senator, Mr. Chair and Senator Reinhart. Good catch on that. And I would move that Senate file 1072, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Finance.
Senator Gimsey has moved the 1072 as amended. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Nay.
Motion is adopted. The amendment has been adopted, and I'm going to have Senator Gimsey take back as a chairman. Thanks.
Thank you, Bonnie.
I got to find all my questions for you.
Thank you, Senator Hull, for filling in his chair. And next on the list is Senate File 992, Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I believe proper order, I have an amendment to the bill first, the A1 amendment.
Senator Wolf moves the A1 amendment to the amendment. Senator Wolf.
Thank you. All this does is change on page 1, line 8, changes the date from 2012 to 2013. I don't think it's practical to think we can have it done by this year.
Any discussion on the A1 amendment? All those in favor? Can we do that? All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. To the bill. Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill that we heard last year. What it does is it is a statute concerning the school bus body standards, and it would require all buses manufactured for use in Minnesota after January 1st, 2013, to be equipped with an automatically activating crossing arm that would come out in front of the bus for safety purposes of children to make sure that they cross far enough out in front of the bus when they're picked up or dropped off.
Any discussion or questions from the committee?
Makes sense to me.
Is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify either for or against the bill? Mr. Lundell, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell with the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation. I've talked about this concern with the author, and it really isn't anything pro or con the bill. It's just that many of you are new legislators to the Transportation Committee, and if you've been involved in transportation and school buses over the last few years, we've had a number of issues with Type 3 vehicle standards. We've had issues with the booster seats on the school buses, and we've had to come back several times to fix matters and trying to make clear on legislative intent. And I think that one of the concerns the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation has is there needs to be a clarification that the operation of this crossing gate would operate in conjunction with the eight-way lights and with the stop arm, which are traffic control items. The crossing gate is more designed as a pupil safety measure in addition to the traffic control items. We want to make sure that for inspection purposes, and I've talked to DPS about this or the State Patrol about this, maybe the rulemaking process is the way to deal this, to make it clear that for inspection purposes, these two items won't be, or the crossing gate won't be considered in the same universe, if you will, as the eight-way light system and the stop arm. So that's just, again, I'm coming up here more today as a safety measure for in terms of clarity as we move forward. And I think that's generally, I think that the senator's done a good job with the bill, and certainly they're we'll work through it. I think that we can live with it. But it's just to make clear on this piece. And again, we've worked with the State Patrol, but we just wanted to be on record as saying our piece on intent.
Voicing your concern about the inspection aspects of that. Well, thank you, Mr. Lundell. Appreciate that. And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Kelleher, and I'm representing the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. We've been working on this bill for the last couple of years with Senator Wolf and Representative House and the other body. There was been a couple of tragedies around the state in recent years, and we believe as school bus operators that this is in the best interest of students and safety. And coming to the Capitol this morning, there were two buses parked out in front of the Capitol. Both of them had crossing arms. The St. Paul School District requires that first student buses have all crossing arms on all their buses. And I think I was told by the State Patrol that first student voluntarily puts crossing arms on all their buses nationwide, and it is a new national standard. So I just want to be on the record that we operate a lot of buses, a lot of school buses in the state, and we are very much in favor of Senator Wolf's bill.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Keller. Senator Wolf.
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 392 be recommended to pass and be sent to the Senate floor.
As amended.
As amended, sorry.
Any further discussion? Members, Senator Wolf moves that House File 392 be, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Wolf.
Thank you.
Next up is Senator Perry, Senate File 1140. Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon to you and the rest of the Transportation Committee. You know, I'm very pleased to present Senate File 1140, which I believe is a long overdue bill that'll do a couple of things. First of all, it will assist law enforcement and the court by clarifying a statute concerning the placement of auto license plates and also enhance public safety and traffic safety as well. Most of you here know that I am a former law enforcement officer, and I've served in a couple of different cities and then on the Sheriff's Department in Fremont County, and I have firsthand seen the need for this legislation. Senate File 1140 strikes me as almost what I would consider a technical bill. My colleagues, of course, Senator Dibble and Senator Senjum, are co-authors of this bill, and I am grateful for their support. This legislation has overwhelming support, and I'm just going to name a few. The Minnesota Sheriff's Association, Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association, Minnesota Peace and Police and Peace Officers Association, the Minnesota Judicial Branch, Minnesota County Attorneys Association, Minnesota Department of Public Safety, including the State Patrol Driver and Vehicle Services Division, Office of Traffic Safety, along with the Association of Minnesota Counties, League of Minnesota Cities, Association of Metropolitan Municipalities, Suburban Hennepin County Prosecutors Association, and the Minneapolis City Attorney's Office. You know, some auto owners think it is legal to display the front license plate in their windshield. That is not true. Some law enforcement officers issue citations for such things. I, for one, remember issuing citations for no front plate at all on a vehicle. And based on their interpretation of the law, if this plate is not affixed to the front bumper, people can be cited for that. The court sees many citations for no front license plates. Matter of fact, I have some stats here. This falls under Minnesota Statute 169-79. There were almost 8,000 citations issued, and out of that, in 2010, Minnesota judges dismissed approximately 15%, or 1,432. Now, if this statute were clarified, law enforcement would realize savings in time and effort from not issuing citations that are later dismissed in court, and the judges and their staff would not waste court time on this matter, and, of course, judges would be helped in determining whether a traffic stop was warranted. So I believe it is incumbent upon the legislature to provide a clear standard for both that the courts and the law enforcement can use under this statute. I believe we need to eliminate the waste of taxpayers' resources and the loss of citizens' respect for the law that results from this ambiguous statute. So I have two testifiers here today for the committee. It's my pleasure to introduce both of them to you. Who will present the law enforcement and the public safety rationale for this bill. First, we have Mary Ellen Hing, supervising attorney from the Minneapolis City Attorney's Office, and then we'll hear from James Franklin, the executive director of the Minnesota Sheriff's Association, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Whichever one of you want to start, just introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mary Ellen Hing. I'm a supervising attorney at the Minneapolis City Attorney's Office. I've been a municipal prosecutor for the last 14 years. This is an issue that I've been aware of for the last 5 or 6 years. I've been working with Aaron Williamson out of the Hennepin County Violations Bureau. As municipal prosecutors, we work out guidelines with the hearing officers in Hennepin County so they can help us handle all the traffic tickets that are issued. And this is an issue that Mr. Williamson recognized was creating some conflict in trying to resolve. And so he and I have been discussing this issue. I think from a prosecutor's perspective, one of the largest challenges that we get to even petty misdemeanors are if they're too vague. The law is supposed to be clear so that people know that their behavior is clearly prohibited or clearly illegal. And if you read the law in its current state, that it has to be displayed on the front of the vehicle. Someone could easily argue, well, I put it up in my windshield. That's the front of my vehicle. It's displayed. How am I violating the law? So we support the amendment because I think it clarifies what the intent is, that that we have to have vehicles with two plates and that those plates are clearly affixed on the bumpers or in a designated license plate holder. And I think anytime we can clarify the law, it will benefit everyone, not only prosecutors, not only the court system, but people driving around. They will not be stopped for things that are clearly not violations. So we support this bill, and if there's any questions I can help answer, I'm certainly happy to do that.
Okay. Are there any questions? Next testifiers? Oh, sorry. Senator Reiner.
Mr. Chair, I have a question, but we'll hear from the testifiers.
Okay. Mr. Franklin.
Mr. Chairman, Jim Franklin, Executive Director for the Sheriff's Association. I'll try to be very brief in light of your time commitments here. Obviously, from a law enforcement point of view, we favor this bill for two reasons. One, clarification helps us so that we aren't enforcing a law where it's ambiguous. Clarification would be great. We think we know what the bumper is. We think we know what the front is. We need some help in defining that, so this will help us. Secondly, from a point of view of law enforcement, helping with two license plates on the vehicle, it helps us in many ways, both coming and going, gives us the opportunity to try to better identify the vehicle. And secondly, we've had numerous cases where a vehicle has crashed, front pieces of the bumper, license plates and things were left behind. It helps us in solving hit-and-run criminal activities, et cetera. So I'll be very brief, and we just need some clarification here. And secondly, the support of the license plates in the front helps us with the identification solution of crime. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Now, Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question for one or either of the testifiers, I get the front issue. I guess where I have a little bit of trouble is the rear issue, and I can totally respect the law enforcement position on this, but, you know, we got a lot of people that work hard in the Northland for a living doing outdoor sorts of things, and that rear license plate on the rear bumper just, you know, seems like it's perpetually getting knocked off. And so, you know, you see folks clearly displayed in a rear window, and I'd like to hear the objections to that. I mean, feels like we could get to the same objective in a couple different ways, and maybe that's not possible. But.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my feeling coming from the law enforcement side, I've seen them in the back window before, and a lot of times, even in the back window, they're like on the back bumper. They become obscured. For me personally, it's knowing. And I can recall many, many incidences where specifically at night, where I'm meeting a vehicle, and matter of fact, we used to, back in the 70s, tweak our left headlight just a little bit so it made sure on low beam it would always hit where we knew the license plate was supposed to be. And it's amazing the feeling when you do that, you can immediately call in that plate at the time you're turning on the car, if you are turning on the car for some reason. Most of the time, I would know whether there was a warrant, whether the car was stolen, if there was anything wrong with that car before we came to a complete stop. I just think, for me personally, knowing that they have to be wherever the manufacturer has places for them, or on the front or rear bumper, is comforting to me to know that that's where it's supposed to be in those quick incidences where you have to capture license plates, whether you're coming up on them or meeting them.
Senator Reiner? Senator DeGray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'm directing this question to Mr. Franklin, but I agree with clarification. I think we need clarification, and so I agree with that. My question is, we have an awful lot of states, or several states at very least, in the nation that don't require front license plate at all. And it would be, I would imagine, a considerable cost savings to the taxpayers that they save the cost of that plate. Have you ever looked at what the difference in, you know, how much value is it really to law enforcement having that front plate? I know Senator Perry has just mentioned that there's times it is, but I've always imagined trying to read a license plate when I'm meeting a car, and if you're going at highway speeds, it's pretty hard to see a license plate that quickly. But is there a has anybody ever looked at that? Does Minnesota really need to have our taxpayers pay the extra money for the extra plate?
Mr. Franklin.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, that's a very fair question. That's a very fair question and valid question. Let me try to answer it this way. When I was on the street working 44 years ago, I was pretty good at collecting license plates on the fly. There is a point where you're going too fast, you can't do that. But if you're driving the normal speed limits, as a law enforcement officer, you get pretty good at it. Secondly, with today's technology, we are even better, especially if you have the video cams and other kinds of things, you might be able to collect that data that way. And that's a positive kind of thing. The only answer I can have for you is this. There might be a cost savings on the license plate by having one versus two. But if you're solving a crime, if you have a critical piece of evidence in a homicide, a burglary, an armed robbery, what is the price that we are saving in that activity? And that's an unknown factor that we cannot quantify numerically. So we've always in law enforcement felt that we in Minnesota require two plates. It's a better protective public safety measure that we support.
Any other questions? Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move Senate File 1140 to pass and be sent to the Senate floor.
Senator Perry moves that Senate File 1140 be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you. With Senator Dibble's permission, and thank you, Senator Dibble, we will take up your bill on a week from today, next Thursday. And thank you for that, and for the testifiers that will be here. Appreciate your indulgence. We are out of time, and the topic of your bill will probably take more time than we would be able to allot. So with that, the committee is adjourned.